The past.
I've got freedom of the heart. It's a brand new start.
The present.
I love it when a plan comes together.
The future.
Dark City 2?
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of red cum in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Reel Number 5 of COL Movies. We are glad you could join us. Pardon me, I have pollen cough. Anyways, let me introduce my intrepid co-host. We'll start off with Fuzz. Fuzz, how you doing?
I'm doing absolutely fabulous.
Excellent. And, of course, Steve. Steve.
Hello. How are y'all?
A little phlegmy from the sounds of it.
No, actually, I wish I had phlegm. I'm really dry. I don't know. Anyways, where were we? News. Let's talk about a little movie news that we found this week. Let's start off with some Transformers news pretty much all over the internets. We now know who is going to be the villain in the third episode of the Transformers movies. That is going to be Shockwave.
Well, you know, let's just hope that bodes true. Because as we all remember, those of us who are fans, and is also referenced on the Yahoo article that we have linked, Michael Bay also promised us a lot of Soundwave, and he showed up as a satellite for all of about like 3 minutes when he was like, you know. So I'm really hoping that we actually do get to see some Shockwave in this movie.
Don't screw it up, Michael Bay. Don't screw it up.
Well, look at the last two movies.
Yeah, well.
Need I say more?
But you know, what was funny? Actually, Michael Bay, if you read in the Yahoo article, he actually took some of the heat for it. He actually admitted that, I think his quote is, "I'll take some of the criticism. It was very hard to put the sequel together that quickly after the writer's strike." You know, and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, you know, kind of fell through because of his actions, and he kind of recognizes that. So we'll see if he actually took the time to make this one well. Although the big wrinkle here is that 3D is being spoken about. So
I wouldn't be surprised if it, I wouldn't be so bad if they film it in 3D. I just hope they don't do the whole 2D for 3D type thing, like other movies have. I just think it would be easier and better, much, much better if they filmed it in 3D. If they can, of course, then there's also if they're going back to Cybertron, if most of the time there aren't humans around and it's pretty much Transformers and pretty much all CGI essentially, then I mean that's not going to be too much of a problem for them to get it to 3D. Animation is always a great venue for 3D because when they do the computer generated, like take Toy Story 3, which was just released. I mean that they made everything in the computer, and all they really need to do is just change how the camera works or add in another camera because to their rendering, because then they have, because they already have basically the full character all built out in three dimensions. And all the computer software, the animation is telling them what to do at what time. So computer animation is much easier to turn to 3D than it is regular film, non-animated film.
Well, I assume you're talking about Clash of the Titans.
Yes.
Because that movie was like, I think, more than 70% through its production cycle when they decided, oh my God, everything's coming out in 3D. I think we better make this 3D. And they ran it through that conversion
Yeah, which
whatever thingamabob,
and it didn't look 3D to me at all.
Yeah.
Even with the 3D glasses on, there didn't seem to be any 3D. From what
I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really speak to it. But I heard that it was pretty flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Not
I just know that I'm excited about this Transformers 3 now. I mean, I didn't care so much about all the Megan Fox hoopla that was going on around it. I really truly wish that they would drop Shia and just start over. But if this is going to be as good as hopefully it sounds like it's going to be. And also one of the plot points that's kind of been leaked out there at this point that there's going to be something about that's going to be a reference to the space race between Russia and the USA back in the day. So whatever that plot point means, it must mean they're leaving the planet. Do you know what I mean? So maybe that's something that's going to be interesting.
Right. From what I've read, and I think I read it on Slash Film, they were talking that Shockwave actually has taken over Cybertron. He's like the de facto ruler of Cybertron right now. And so I would assume that the movie's about going back to Cybertron, taking back their home.
Good. Cool. Well, and also apparently the twins are out of this movie. Thank God.
Yeah, the point of them was kind of useless. And from my understanding, though, is they're going to make an appearance and then completely
blow up.
I was going to say, hopefully it's them getting shot.
If they die, everybody's probably going to cheer in the audience. They are the
Jar Jar Binks, the Jar Jar Binks of this series.
And you know, not that he's going to listen to this at all, but you know, the one piece of advice I give: you don't have to be funny all the time. There doesn't have to be a joke in every scene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, that was driving me nuts. And I mean, the second one really. I think it might be tied with Batman and Robin as being like one of the most disappointing. Horrible movies of all time.
And I gotta say, for those of us who are purists, as prior to the show, Fuzz and I were making fun of Jeff, for those who weren't listening, making fun of Jeff for not being one of the not being familiar with the original Transformers.
Wait a minute, what are you talking about? No, you weren't.
We were.
I'm familiar with the original Transformers.
We're older than you. We get it.
I got the entire series back here on DVD. So don't tell me I don't know anything about Transformers. They were the toys I played. I didn't play G.I. Joe. I played Transformers.
Well, anyway, my point I was trying to raise is I was actually looking forward to RC. I'm not going to lie to you. The girl Transformer. I was looking forward to seeing what they were going to do with her. And then to turn her into the triplets and all that bull crap. I was extremely disappointed.
Yeah, and I wasn't excited about RC at all. I mean, it's pretty much the good stuff was before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
All the good Transformers was before the 1985 animated movie, which you should probably do sometime on here or past movies.
Won tickets on the radio from Q105 to go see that.
To see that? That's awesome.
Yeah. Took my brother to see it. And then as soon as Bumblebee said, damn, I was like, oh my God.
swearing.
That's the movie. That's the movie which made geek children cry. Greek men children cried at that movie. If you haven't seen the movie, we're going to talk about that eventually. See it at that time. We won't explain it here.
Maybe this is one of those ones we look forward to. We'll watch that, and then we'll go see Transformers 3 when it finally comes out.
Hey, that sounds good.
There you go.
Okay.
But moving on. Speaking of robots, late breaking news, robots. That word on the street is that the Voltron movie is in talks and discussions. Apparently, it's been kind of planned out there for eons and eons. And there's been a lot of things that have been said back and forth. But definitely, it's sounding like it is for real coming along, according to the potential producer, Richard Suckle. And that everything is on its screenwriter is going to be announced very soon. You know, and there's apparently a new line of toys that's coming out and all this kind of stuff. So everybody's trying to say that this is kind of the prequel, encouraging people and getting people excited about the new Voltron movie. So let's hope we hear some more about this pretty soon, because it would be neat to see.
I just hope it doesn't turn into a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers-ish type thing.
Yeah, hopefully, because, it'll be darker. Hopefully it'll be darker. Voltron's always kind of had that little edge of a...
And might I say the producer's name is a little bit unfortunate.
I know.
Well, it might be Sukul, because I work with somebody with the same last name, and it's pronounced Sukul.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be
Dick Tucker. Yeah, I don't think I'd go there.
So I have to ask our, you know, because there's like Coke versus Pepsi, Vehicle Voltron, Lion Voltron.
Lion Voltron? Lion Voltron? Lion there were too many people involved. I do like Vehicle Voltron, I'm not going to lie, but too many people involved. There were too many personalities, and on the TV show they were annoying as hell. But I did have both of them, I'm not going to lie. Although my brother got the die-cast and I got the plastic lion, but you could put the people in them. So that was a cooler. I tried to say it was cooler, even though I wanted the Matchbox metal one.
But yeah, I was pretty down on the vehicle one, but that I was a big anything and everything with wheels or having to do with vehicles, I was pretty much gaga over. So you
liked Mask?
I did.
Mask was cool. I actually still have my Jeep that turns into the boat. I still have that somewhere.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, we are not talking about the Cher movie. We are talking about the toys.
I actually have a DVD collection of season one of Mask.
Sweet.
Oh, I just realized I also have the motorcycle with the sidecar that turns into the submarine.
Mm. I had that one. Mm-hmm. I had that one. I had the flying car that Tracker had. I think I even had Rhino, the big semi. I think I even had that one. I loved Mask. Anyways, where were we? Let's talk about The Wizard of Oz.
It is Pride Month.
Okay, Dorothy.
So, rumor has it, and I don't have a link to an article in here, but rumor has it that Sam Raimi has agreed to direct Disney's 3D prequel to The Wizard of Oz, which they're going to be calling Oz the Great and Powerful.
Be a bunch of undead munchkins, like driving, walking around.
Yeah, and I threw this in here at the last minute, and I'll get a link in there before it goes up. But the other little thing mentioned in the article was that the role of the wizard is being specifically rewritten for Robert Downey Jr. So,
wow.
Mm-hmm. Could be interesting.
Could be. Although I'm a little disappointed that we're going the article mentions this too, a little disappointed that we're going the origin route. And when there's so much material from this universe. I mean, there's so many novels and so many things they could do, but we'll see.
Well, and one of the things about this movie could be most of the movie does not take place in Oz. Mm-hmm. Maybe the first half is him at his fair or wherever he was doing his thing. Maybe something happens. He gets framed for something and then he escapes on a balloon or something. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there. So it'd be interesting to find out what the heck this story is about. Do we know, was there a book, a prequel book to Wizard of Oz?
I don't think so.
Or is this a completely
called Wicked? It's called Wicked.
Yeah, no. In the original novels, I don't think there was a prequel.
All right. Last but not least, last Friday in New York City.
New York
City. Bear City the movie was finally premiered, featuring music from our favorite people over in Bearpalooza. I know Elijah Black has two songs in there. Smile for Me, which I think I played on Cubs Out Loud before. Very, very cool. Very, very excited. I'm in the credits.
Ooh, cool.
I even have a picture. So I can't wait to actually see that. Because
is it in your Viddler shirt?
Yes. They had to take out the Viddler part because no logos. But yeah, it is that same picture because I love that picture.
Bend and twist. Show the waist.
But I found this video of behind the scenes from Homopop, behind the scenes of Beer City, which I'm going to embed in so people can take a look at that. And that, folks, is the news. Which means that we've got this. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time.
I gotta get back in time. An offbeat film about 27-year-old Buck reuniting with boyhood friend Chuck, who decides, evidence to the contrary, that they're still best pals. This fascinating look at the weird chemistry of attachment and obsession gets darker as a rebuffed Chuck begins to stalk Buck, who'll need a huge no-pest strip to end the one-sided infatuation.
Back in time this week, we take a look at the 2000 movie Chuck and Buck, directed by Miguel Artela, written and starring Mike White as Buck and Chris Weitz as Chuck. Now, I'm saving most of what I'm going to say for the end of this segment. But let's start off with a couple of things. You might have recognize Mike White from this if you've seen Zombieland. He got eaten by a zombie for violating rule number 2 of Beware of Bathrooms. Yes. Chris, the guy who plays Chuck, went on to direct and produce such masterpieces like New Moon and The Golden Compass.
Your favorite movie.
It wasn't my favorite. I never even watched that thing. I like the movie. I like the Golden Compass movie. I just do. I mean, it's not like one of my favorites, but
it's no Tomb Raider.
Exactly. Also, when Chuck turns on the TV in his office, he claims to have signed the band in the video. That band was They Might Be Giants, playing the song Dr. Worm. So there are some bits of trivia about this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, Fuzz,
yes?
My question for you is, mm-hmm. What inspired you to inspire us to view this film? Curious.
Well, you know, I was going through a ton of movies, trying to think of one, you know, to go along with our little theme here for this month. And, you know, there were some obvious choices I could have made with, you know, I was having this discussion with a friend of mine, you know, could have done Priscilla or some of the other ones. And then, you know, Brokeback Mountain was thrown about. And that was one that, you know, Jeff said he refused to watch.
Amidst great controversy, right.
So the discussion fell upon this movie, and I'd actually never seen this before. But it was described to me, and the moment that it was described to me, I kind of said, well, you know, since Jeff won't watch Brokeback Mountain, I'm sure he's going to love to watch this one.
Hey, when I heard the thing, I'm like, oh, this could be interesting. And I was waiting to watch it, so... But, yeah. I mean, that's what this show is for. Introduce us to movies we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Nice mm-hmm. first.
And I'm sure that there's a ton of people that will definitely relate. Okay, I definitely related to some pieces in this movie. More on the Chuck end. Let me clarify. Not on the Buck end. Yeah. But
had some stalkers, have we?
Early days. The early days. You know, the one thing that came to mind the entire movie, I just kept thinking, creepy. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. It's like, but I do have to say, for those of you who have not seen the movie yet, do not worry. No one ends up getting killed, and there is no suicide in this movie, because I just kept expecting it. But fortunately, they did not get to that point.
No, fortunately it kind of it had a happy ending, so
right.
For that, what that happy right. ending is, we won't tell you.
Right. Dun, dun, but dun. I do think that there was a whole point in, you know, watching this movie, I kept thinking, I'm like, oh my God, who's gonna die? Oh my God. The new wife is gonna get killed somewhere. You know, so I'm like, there's gonna be some kind of, you know, unrequited love kind of situation that's gonna go bad here. But fortunately it didn't. Fortunately, it did.
Yeah, see, I didn't really have that fear watching the movie because when it was described to me, I mean, it was described to me as a dark comedy. So, I really...
Yeah, it did.
Where was the comedy?
Hold on, I'm looking around my room right now.
I thought parts of it funny.
Okay.
I thought parts of it funny. I mean, like his whole, interaction with everybody, not just, the creepy interactions with Chuck.
Wait a minute.
I found to be kind of funny. I mean, in that sort of weird, awkward Napoleon Dynamite kind of way.
Like the way that Maya Rudolph looked at him, like, who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of faces you mean?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I liked her in this movie for some reason. As like, oh my God, why are you talking? Like, who are you? And why do you keep calling here saying your name is like Chuck Rabinowitz or whatever? I mean, like making up names.
Right, right.
No, this is Bilbo Baggins calling for Chuck.
I mean, you guys didn't find any of it funny? Well, I'm not going to ask Jeff, but you didn't find any of this funny? See, any of it?
No, I mean, there were comedic moments, I mean, especially, I think some of it coming from more of the innocent side of Buck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it's very clear that, Buck is immature for his age, that's probably the best way to put it. But clearly he had some blocks that have not allowed him to mature like other adults in his life. And of course he's, suddenly comes into money because his mother dies and certain things, not quite knowing how to really handle stress and how to handle things. He just kind of reacts. So, I mean, there are some comedic moments within all of that purity and naivete.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like the guy he ends up hitting on that's not Chuck, he ends up, they have a funny interaction that thank goodness nobody got beat up in. It was one of those, right. Like, this could have gone very badly. Right. But at least it was kind of a, it's like, bottom line, I don't want to suck your dick.
Yeah, I guess I might have made it funny for me too, because like especially in that scene, where he's passed out on the couch and Buck's getting a little adventurous, I'm watching the scene and just picturing in my mind like if Jeff is squirming out of his
skin. Jeff has his face, his hands over his face at that point going, oh.
No, by that time I'm probably out of the room.
Okay. So yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I was watching it. One piece that I definitely noted was I was trying to figure out what they were trying to say from the movie, because there were actually a lot of kids in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you're seeing Buck, who's not quite sure of who he is and all this kind of stuff. And they kept putting him in situations with children.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept wondering where they were going with that. Fortunately, they did not make him out to be a child molester.
No.
Yet another one of these things that's like, thank goodness they didn't go there.
Right.
But I kept seeing him, like that, and then he was at the kid's school, and he was hanging out with the little boy, and I kept waiting for... I was going, ooh, please don't go there, like the whole time. Unfortunately, they didn't, but it left you with that tension of going, are they going to make him into a child molester?
Yeah. I think it was more to reinforce the fact that, like, mentally he's, like, stunted.
He's their age, 12. Right.
Yeah, he hasn't progressed beyond that point in his life.
Right. Like, he couldn't tell the one kid to stop playing with firecrackers, for example.
Right.
Because he didn't have that maturity.
Mm-hmm.
So that all makes sense, in retrospect. But during the course of the movie, I just kept feeling this agita building up, going like, oh God, please don't let this happen. Because that would have been bad. I don't know.
And I mean, I'm kind of glad that they kind of left the whole whatever happened to them or whatever they did when they were younger, they hinted at it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we're never too explicit in what went on between the two of them, I don't think, really.
What? There's that.
I mean, the one line that he says, and that's
I think we should play a game.
Yeah,
like we used to, right? Yeah,
used to, and that's really the only time in the movie where he's really explicit about the activities they engaged in. So, I found that kind of interesting, and you know, it really plays on the whole motif of, you know, they were exploring as kids, and you know, how you've got this kind of divergence as, you know, Buck is really fixated on what happened, and Buck, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree with Buck, is obviously gay. Mm-hmm. Chuck, you know, who experimented, obviously wasn't. Although they do kind of go play back and forth with that towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's the one scene in the movie that was kind of like at the very end where they're both in the restaurant across the room, and Chuck sort of gives him that look, that like really long sort of, you know, and his wife is looking at him at that point, kind of like she's like watching the expression on his face and like kind of trying to figure it out. And that's kind of where you see Buck kind of like his demeanor kind of change. Like, I know I'm moving on from you, so it's okay.
Yeah, he was the first one to break eye contact at that time. And that would have been the first time for that to happen.
Right. So, thought that was
interesting. I know one of the pieces that's out there on this film is that the director, it's James Keller. Mm-hmm. Is it the director or writer? I'm trying to remember. But he's not the director. Miguel Arteta was the director. Yeah. But anyway, James Keller put the point out there that the film explores the hysterical fear. I'm pulling a Jeff this week. The hysterical fear of exposure to some heterosexual males' experience when they've had sexual relations with other men, whether that be early on, or it's sort of that, I don't know, that the homosexual regret. You know, or did I look at that guy? Why did I look at that guy? Why did I do that? You know, some of that pieces. And that's what they try to say, that this film explores that. Does this mean I'm gay?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, just because I did this or I did that, or just because I let another guy touch me there, am I gay? Those kinds of things. What do y'all think?
Well, I think he outright rejects that at first. I mean, mm-hmm. with that, there's that scene in his office where he's just like, you know, it's like he kind of wanted to forget everything that he did. It was like, no, we didn't do that. You know, we didn't do anything, whatever. Like, I'm gonna ignore it and it's gonna go away. And Buck was kind of like that reminder that, you know, of his past. And I think that's mm-hmm. really what made him so uncomfortable, because he had moved on and he was trying to build this. You know, this new life around himself, and here comes Buck.
Yeah, reminding him of what he did.
Like right. It or not, here I come.
I think we all have situations in our past where it's just like, we're kind of like, okay, we've moved on from it. We probably won't ever expect to run into that person again. We don't, you know, and then you turn right around the corner and you're like, oh, hey.
Mm.
Wah wah, you know, like reality smacking me in the face again.
You're the last person I expected to run into. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that, you know, and that kind of, you know, I guess in general, one of the questions I wrote down is, did I think that Chuck had regrets, or did he just see it as experimenting, and with Buck's inability to kind of look at it from that perspective? Because mm-hmm. he's, you know, all about kind of self-gratification and that kind of at that that maturity level.
Right.
That I don't know that he could have seen it as experimenting. Mm-hmm. He probably saw it as, I like this, I want to do it again.
Right.
You know, that he got gratification from it. So it's just quite an interesting piece. And, you know, and another question I threw out on our talking points is like, you know, I was curious, anybody had a straight boy crush?
Oh, of course.
Or had the ones where you're trying to figure them out, you know, you're hoping.
You're like, some homosexual male didn't?
Yeah. Right, no,
right. All the time.
That should really be the question. I mean,
yeah.
But would anybody really go this far, or was this did Buck do all this more because he was that man child? He was in that younger state of mind and being like, well, he's my best friend, so I should do things with my best friend.
Mm-hmm. So well, it might have been 20 years ago,
right? He's trying to reconcile that separation, though. I don't think he had the ability to do that, you know.
He's your best friend,
but were you in love with him, really? I mean, I don't think he can reconcile those emotions, really.
Or even just the simple question of, like, when he went into their house for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and he, of course, asked the girlfriend or fiance at that time, where he's like, or was it wife at that time?
No, it's just fiance.
I was going to say fiance at that time. And where he first asked, he's like, oh, there aren't any pictures of me here. You mm-hmm. know, kind of thing. Like, right. You know, where he still had pictures of them as kids, you know, all over right. his room.
I just loved how he was so blatant and like, I'm going to go talk to Chuck right now. So, yeah, see you later. Like, I'm done with you. The only real big problem I had with this movie, really, I mean, I thought Mike White did an awesome job, and whether or not he's a good actor or not, he played the role extremely well. Just based on the factor of how easily he creeped me out.
Yeah.
So, but everyone else in this movie, aside from the theater manager, I thought really. They were acting like, I don't know, like they were so wooden. And I don't know if that was the director that did that. You know
where I think that may come from, mm-hmm. and this was one of the points that I was thinking about for this at the end, is I think they wanted to throw out there kind of like how much we ignore people
mm.
and ignore those kind of behaviors. Do you know what I mean? Like kind of that this is why I kept thinking something was going to happen physically. You know, to somebody killing or suicide or something like that, where they were trying to put that point out there that's like, this guy is not acting okay. You know, these behaviors right. are not all right.
Right.
The things he's saying and doing are creepy beyond belief, but everybody's just kind of like, yeah, Buck, whatever. Moving on. You know, like kind of like, haha, Buck, you know, let's go to this next. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And when you kind of start ignoring signs of things like that is when right. they start to escalate, or because that person gets really upset because they're not being, you know, I will not be ignored, Dan, you know, you know, kind of like stuff. You're well, like,
I mean, I was more thinking of like just it seemed like everybody's delivery was really stiff, and I couldn't decide if whether or not it was like it was a conscious decision on somebody's part, because it almost made it seem like Buck was in his own little world, you know, where he was comfortable and he, you know, had this fantasy playing out in his mind of what was supposed to happen. And then there was this outside world with all these grown-ups, like all the people that he should have gone along with, you know, and grown up with, but he was kind of separated from them. And the only other person that really didn't come off that way was the theater manager, and she came off more warm and, you know, friendly towards him. So I was almost kind of like, you know, they made that conscious decision. It's either that or everyone else just had terrible delivery. I don't know. Maybe that's all it is, and I'm reading way too much into it. But that just was an impression I got when I was watching it.
I can see that too. I mean, she was nice because she was actually someone who, I don't know, took the time to get to know him and what his issues were. I mean, you could tell that, like, please, she had one eye open the entire time she was ever around him. She's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, kind of like, like when she called him out on it, she was like, I think this is about homosexuals.
Yeah.
You know, and he's
oh,
like,
oh, God, the play.
It's homoerotic.
The play.
Play within the movie.
Oh, the play. That was just bizarre. That myself, I just thought that was hilarious. I mean, I don't know how much of the play Jeff saw.
So let's talk about that. So as was mentioned, one scene we mentioned about me squirming. Through this entire movie, I was screaming. I can't watch this movie. I tried it over and over again and just had to stop. I was like running out of the room because of a moment closing my eyes, plug in my ears so I wouldn't hear. I tried watching this even with the director commentary on, and it still didn't help. So I couldn't watch this movie. I mean, I got through it, painstakingly went through it. So when you're talking about all those scenes, yes, I do remember those scenes. It was just a real pain, and I didn't see it in its purest form of just the movie, period. Just because of the way I am and my run and hide, my flight reflex when it comes to embarrassing moments and anything. This movie was just way too creepy for me. The whole time, Mike White nailed his part. Absolutely nailed it. I think he did the job absolutely fantastically, and which was the problem for me. He did it a little too well to me. That it just creeped me out. I couldn't watch the movie. I did get through it. But I didn't see everything 100% because of my either having the director's commentary on, doing something else while it was running in the background. I tried watching this movie one day when I went off to get some dinner, and I had ripped it and put it on my Zoom and was watching it. And just frequently, I'd take the earbuds out of my mouth and go back to what I was eating and focusing on
mouth.
That.
Out of your mouth,
out of my ears.
But yeah. Yeah, we saw a couple of your status updates on Twitter, and I was just like
trying to watch the movie again.
It's okay. It's okay, because I think all three of us have used the word creepy today probably more than we've ever used it in our lifetime.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I have to admit, like, at the end, I was like, Chuck and Buck subtitle, what the fuck? You know, it's
kind of like, Chuck and Buck, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's like.
And yeah, you can see the I wanted the explicit. WTF.
You ran out and bought the soundtrack right away, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. That was another problem. Wasn't it like every single song in that I got freedom in my heart?
Well, I think there were only two songs in the entire movie, and they were just...
It was just over and over.
After I finished watching the movie, I actually had to do some laundry. So I was going back and forth to the laundry room, and I realized it kept playing it over and over on the DVD menu. And I was like, I'm going to fall asleep just hearing this over and over in my head.
God. It was perfect. It was perfect for this movie because it ended up just creeping you out, even if you're hearing this, which is essentially a pretty happy song, you know?
Yes.
But it sounds very childish, you know, like a song for that would go on our kids' record, like Kids Bop or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Some Marlo Thomas in the 70s kind of. Like,
yeah, it's
free to be you and me kind of thing.
It's a representation of how Buck is this man child. Mm-hmm. He still plays that record? Yes, it had a vinyl record.
Mm-hmm.
Don't see those many times nowadays.
Yeah, if anybody's curious, just look up "Freedom of My Heart" by Gwendolyn and. Prepare to have your brain melted.
Or watch this movie, either way.
Yeah, either way.
I suppose watching this movie would completely and utterly destroy it. All right, so let's talk about what we've learned on this show. Mm-hmm. First off, Mike White can be really creepy. No shit. Stalkers are scary. Don't entertain people who you think may be displaying stalkerish behaviors. Mm-hmm. You never know when you're going to run into people from your past, so be prepared. I've got freedom from my heart. It's a brand new start. We'll give you nightmares if you hear it too often in one sitting. Oodly, 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 oodly. Fuck you! Make it stop! never invite your straight best friend over so you can blow him when you started to get over him. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, Jeffica never watched this movie, not because he doesn't want to, but because he'll run screaming from the room 99% of the movie. All right.
We need therapy for you, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know if anybody saw the link that I posted on Facebook a while back, the Mike White and Justin Long Prop 8 video.
But, seen.
if you haven't seen it, look it up. It's pretty funny.
It's funny and depressing all at the same time.
Yes, it is. But
so let's go through what we've got to say about recommending this. Fuzz, what do you got to say?
Well, what I got to say is if you like the idea of a gay stalker version of Napoleon Dynamite, then it doesn't scare you, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Steve.
Let's see that. All I could think of was I would not recommend this to just anyone. I think if you like artsy films, if you like the real gay film, yeah, but I wouldn't just be like, hey, let's pop in Chuck and Buck. What do y'all think? Yeah, no. It would depend on the people. Like, if it's somebody, I would really have to know that they like movies. So.
And last but not least, all I can say about this is I can't recommend it. Can't not recommend it either. Anyways, so that is Chuck and Buck. Now let's move on to. Right here. Next up, we got the A-Team. You know what? Maybe we should have Griff tell us about it.
This updated feature film take on the hit 1980s television show follows a group of Iraq war veterans on the run from the U.S. military forces while they try to clear their names after being framed for a crime they didn't commit. Along the way, Colonel Hannibal Smith, Captain H.M. Howling Mad Murdock, Sergeant Bosco B.A. Baracus, and Lieutenant Templeton Faceman Peck help out various people they encounter. Joe Carnahan directs this high-octane actioner.
Actioner? Who wrote that?
It's like, wow.
Okay. So a remake of the television series. It really is a remake, reboot, you might say, because they move everything. In the television show, they were Vietnam vets. In this movie, they are Iraq war vets.
Well, they were vets before the Iraq war.
Yeah, and then they were in it when they show what they did, which is different. Yeah, they ended up stealing some. Well, they were more like stealing back some U.S. mint plates. So that was the point of that movie.
Yeah, I had no idea that they were going to go the whole. It's kind of a prequel, sort of. Because I don't remember. I mean, I watched the show when I was growing up, but I don't remember them ever explaining what the crime was that they didn't commit. They always, you know, it was in the credits.
But yeah, they did. They mention it in the show. I mean, they don't show anything about it. But they were in the original show. They robbed the Bank of Hanoi or something like that. Mm. I think it was Bank of Hanoi. Yeah. Actually, when I got home from seeing this movie, the first thing I did was pop into Netflix streaming and start watching the A-Team.
Ah, okay.
Original. Mm-hmm. So I've been watching it, and I've been like, this is so awesome. all I could say about the television show, the movie, both of them were just awesome.
Well, and I like that they kind of, from the very beginning, were kind of like, we're going away from the original. You know, like from destroying the van, you know, that mm-hmm. was kind of like the ultimate, like slap in the face to the movie.
And I saw that in the trailer. I thought that was awesome when I watched it in the trailer. But I was a little disappointed that it was so early on in the movie, but mm-hmm. the way they set it up. Yeah, you could say that this definitely is a prequel.
But, yeah, but I do like your term of reboot, though, you know, when you really think of that word. I mean, but it's not the exact, mm-hmm. you know, but I mean, more than anything else, that it was like an homage to the old film, but they were letting you know, like, bitch, this ain't the old film, you know, or the old TV show. You know, they were kind of
screw that show.
Yeah, they were like, we're going to blow up the van that you all love and cherish. now we're going to start the movie. You know, it's sort of like...
And that scene is just... I don't know what is about it, but I think that's absolutely hysterical. Is that... What is it? Air conditioner or whatever it was drops onto the van, totally destroying it. And it says, "My van! I'll kill you, fool!" It says, "You can't park there. That's a handicap zone." I mean, the lines and the way they delivered it, it was totally B.A. and Murdoch.
Yeah.
The casting on this movie was stupendous, in my opinion. I mean, let's talk about roles. With Bruce Willis was considered for the role of Hannibal. I can't see Bruce Willis in that spot. I mean, one of the things that I really kind of liked what they did here was, while they weren't going for an exact match, they were going to try to find people that looked like the original cast. And they did it without specifically, you know, trying to be exactly like the original cast. So I think they did a really, really good job in the casting on that, especially Bruce Willis. Couldn't see him as Hannibal.
Yeah, I mean, I, in all honesty, I really enjoyed pretty much everyone in the movie. But Liam, really, I don't know. There was something about his performance that I didn't buy completely. I kept wanting him to
break out into period for some reason. Like, I don't know. He's one of these actors that I always hear with his English accent and everything, I wasn't prepared to see him. I kept waiting for him to speak with an accent.
See, I think the biggest problem I had was he was wearing some funky contacts in that movie or something. His eyes were freaking me out, and he was doing like the Batman kind of gruff voice through the movie, sort of like a forced kind of grunting sort of voice quality, and he kind of would go in and out of it. And I think that kind of threw me off. I love Liam Neeson. I've loved him in tons of movies, but this, I was really a stretch for me to kind of embrace him as Hannibal. But I don't really know off the top of my head who I would have picked over him. I mean, if I got a chance to sit here and kind of think about it, I could probably come up with somebody, but Bruce Willis might have pulled it off. It would have been a stretch. I almost think Woody Harrelson would have been a good choice. Almost, really? He would have been a little young for Hannibal, but
he was considered for Murdoch.
Yeah, he could have pulled that off.
Nah, I can.
But I think what's his name from District 9 did awesome. I think he did an awesome job.
Do you know from the commercials though? I didn't ever look at. I always thought it was Hank Azaria. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Really?
looking for the commercials, I was like, is that Hank Azaria? Because all you ever see is that scene where he like puts where he tries to jump start the car, you know, and so for like I look from a side and I'd be like, oh, and then went to the movie. I'm like, oh, it's not Hank Azaria.
Yeah.
Far from it, but he did a pretty good job though.
Yeah, now, I'm never sure how to pronounce his first name. Charlton Copley?
Charlton Copley. Sounds good to me.
From District 9, the guy, the star of District 9. So.
Now, I think one of the things, too, that I noticed throughout the movie, I kept looking for some of the teasers that were in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all notice that it was sort of like Iron Man 2?
I mean, it wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, where they didn't like in Iron Man 2, and we all talked about it during then, that they didn't do the "you complete me" as he's jumping out of the plane. Like that wasn't actually in the movie. And the same thing, like you see in the commercial, you see BA coming around humming the A-Team theme, and he doesn't do that in the movie.
Right. Well, I almost wonder if that's kind of a I don't know if it's a conscious thing, but it might be a function of they're shooting the movie and they have, you know, all these dailies or whatever that come out. And I think it's a matter of the marketing department, which typically doesn't have anything to do with the actual production people in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's just the marketing department for the studio. They're probably just grabbing whatever footage and piecing it together to make a trailer. And then the director or editor decides to go a different direction with the scene or whatever. Now, whether they're doing that consciously, I have no idea.
That's what I was wondering, if it's starting to be a move that the big film houses are trying to make, you know, just to get you to watch and kind of not give the entire movie away, maybe give you a glimpse of it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a trick.
Right.
That's trick. Three off. It's like, hey, there's this scene where they do this type of trick. And, of course, BA whistles the A-team music.
Right.
And that could have easily been overdubbed. I mean, he's whistling, so it's not like his...
Right.
You could tell exactly what he's whistling. So, I mean, they probably had that scene and then had somebody. It was probably not even... Mm-hmm. Quentin Jackson mm-hmm. whistling.
They did use the theme in the movie, though. They did use it.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they were showing the TV show.
Well, they were showing The Great Escape.
Yeah, right at the beginning. Yeah. You know, I have to say, one of the things that I thought was really fun about this movie was actually seeing all of the origin of B.A. Baracus. Do you know what I mean? Like, actually, I thought that was quite interesting because he was, you know, in the TV show, he was kind of the quiet one. You didn't really know a whole lot about him other than, you know, he was handy in a fight. But it was interesting to hear some of that origin aspect. And, you know, I did find it odd that he did have that one touching moment with Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems completely out of the character. It seems kind of completely out of the, like, all of a sudden it's like, why are they having a touching moment where it looks like they're going to cry, you know? But I did like his character development, and I did love when they first met, and when Hannibal pulls over the van, and BA looks at him and goes, "What is this, opposite day?"
Right.
That was funny. That was really funny.
I did find the movie enjoyable. I mean, it was over the top, and it wasn't as over the top as I had kind of played it out in my head, especially from watching the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
The whole tank sequence wasn't as
I was freaking out.
Grit your teeth unbearable as I thought it was going to be. Because from just the glimpse that I got of the trailer, I was like, oh my God, please come on. At least they sort of kind of qualified some things. They did some smart things to me. Cause like the first thing that I thought of when I saw the trailer with that part was like, okay, how high up are they? How is he breathing? And of course he qualified that in the movie before he jumped out there. Like, you can breathe below 20,000 feet. Right. And then he jumped out. So I'm like, all right, I'll give him that. Give him some credit there. And that whole sequence, especially the end of it, that was probably, to me, it was the funniest line in the movie where he's like, you know, which way to Berlin? I love that part. So, but yeah, I did have some technical problems. And, you know, one of the things that we put in the notes here is, you know, CGI versus realism. The whole ending sequence, to me, it came this close to pulling me out of the movie.
I got thrown off. There was that one scene where Face, does the line down, and then he jumps down through a few of the crates and lands. I was like, oh, that totally threw me off. That just did not work.
I put the note there because I liked the first three quarters of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and I know Jeff, and I know you really, Jeff and I talked about this already, that I know you really liked it. And I was just sitting here going, like, I'm going with this movie. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good ride with it. And then that last, like, 15, 20 minutes, I was just like, oh, why'd they ruin it? You know, it was just that whole, and I put a note, I said, does anyone else think the end sequence felt like Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just so over CGI'd. Like, yeah. I mean, when you saw all of those things falling toward B.A. Baracus and he's standing there running through them all, and then you see, you know, and then like you're talking about Face swinging from vine, you know, things, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm just like, this just went, it went from really cool car stunts and really cool like people really doing the action sequences to like all of a sudden going to full-on CGI, and it just spoiled the mood.
One of my things about that scene is when they do the shuffle, is totally CG. You could tell that part I could easily forgive them.
Yeah, if that was the only part.
Just that, if they did something else to did less to CGI, and I don't know how they could have changed that scene to not have the CGI with those crates falling down.
So really well, good. I mean, the part with the actual, I mean, when the ship blows and the crates start to go. I'm okay with it, that part. I lost it when you see the part when they're falling around BA.
Yeah.
I don't think they needed to show that at all. I mean, we knew that he was in there. They could have just, you know,
had him doing some running editing towards the camera, everything falling, but not right. Have him dodging around the different crates.
Exactly. I mean, we went from the A-Team to Blade all of a sudden in a heartbeat. And I was just like, I wrote down specifically, I'm looking at my notes that I wrote down, and the comment I wrote was really poor CG. Just, you know, I didn't know how else to put it on there. It was just like, wow. So, yeah, that took it out. I mean, other than that, I enjoyed the movie.
And the thing about that scene in particular is they didn't show BA, just have him doing that one run, show everything falling, don't even show him at all, and then he pops his head up after the whole mess is done or something. That would have been perfect. I mean, and that would almost be like classic A-Team stuff.
Right.
The one way I went into this movie was I was expecting A-Team, which means over the top, not meant to be realistic. You know, I didn't have necessarily high expectations. Like, this is going to be like a Best Picture movie. This is definitely not going to win Best Picture movie. But I do have to say right here, right now, I'm making my statement. So far this year, this is my favorite movie.
Wow.
I loved this movie so much. It was more just because it was so much fun. It took you on a thrill ride. Is it going to win any awards?
No.
Probably not. But you know what? I don't care.
Maybe like last week, maybe so it'll be an MTV movie award for best explosion or something.
Best explosion. Right. Yeah.
Best team. Best team in a film. I agree in some ways that there was a lot of good, and I like that you just referenced the TV show, because one of the things that I always liked about the TV show was that it was natural. You know, and when I say natural, of course I'm talking about stage stunts in Hollywood, but as far as it was real. And it wasn't completely, you know, CG'd. And sure, it was just MacGyver with four people, because, you know, they would always figure out how to MacGyver something into, you know, the plan coming together in the end. But it was always fun to see how it came together, you know, just kind of the naturalness of what happened. And I just think it went to the point, I think I made another point somewhere, or maybe I did wrote it down, but, you know, only the good guys can shoot people too. I mean, this was another one of those movies where it's like all the bad guys have like automatic weapons and they're like laying down fire, and Hannibal's got his Beretta and he shoots one bullet and takes the guy out.
Yeah, we call that like the stormtrooper rule.
Yeah, it's sort of it's like, dude, you're in a car driving 95 miles an hour, hanging off of a door, you know, or something like that, and you can shoot the guy that has the semi-automatic rifle. That's cool. Because I'm like, I've shot an AR-15. They are not going to, you know, like, if he's that bad of a shot, he shouldn't have an AR-15. You're wasting bullets. You know, like, it's, but still, but having the, you know, it just some of those aspects of it just took it out of the natural realm of reality. Although we did have one of the leads get shot, you know, that was cool. I mean, at least
they've been shot. There was a scene in the first season where BA was shot and had to get a transfusion from Murdoch, which he was.
Oh, right. Right. I remember that. I'm going to go crazy.
And it was, you've got my blood in me. Just wait until you get the cloudy eyes. All your words start rhyming. Sorry, I just watched that episode.
I remember it so funny. So,
I've been watching the television show, and I think they did a good job bringing it up to more modern day, because it's a movie. You do things that are more spectacular than what you would do in a television show.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they actually, like, after the first or second season, being that it was so popular at the time, if they had come out with a movie, you would probably see some of the stunts, some of the action, like that you would have seen in this movie in an actual 18 movie from back in the day. So they would make it more over the top, but still keep that sense of A-Team style. And it's a reboot. It's different. It's not the series. One of the things that, at least for movies or for book movies, movies based off a book, I always keep them separate. I do comparison of them in my head, being like, oh, we were missing this and this, or they did this instead of this, blah, blah, blah. But usually I keep them separately and consider them separate entities. And in general, I'll say, I really like the book. I really like the movie. They're two different things. If I had to compare, I'm sure I'd probably like the book over the movie. But a book is a different medium. It works differently. And that's the same thing when it comes to this, a television show back in the 80s versus a movie in 2010. I mean, the technology is different. The crowd is different. The audience is different. You have to separate those out and really consider A-Team more of what it is, while recognizing that there was a television series, knowing something about the television series. And I think making those jokes.
Yeah. I disagree with you to a point. Because I know for me growing up and watching the A-Team and with the family, the things that I liked about the A-Team are what drew me to wanting to see the movie. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's what happens. I think that's what happens when you do these reboots like this, where people lose interest in the reboot. Is just like, if it strays too far away from the original, then, you know, it wasn't A-Team in space. You know, right. I mean, it wasn't anything like that. It was supposed to be the A-Team. And right. So when you go see the A-Team, the thing you liked was the stuff like the cool action stunts, them shooting weapons, them getting out of crazy situations. You don't expect 20 minutes of full-on CGI, because that just wasn't the essence of the A-Team. They got out of the situations using their brains and wit and skill. They didn't get out of the situation by, you know, dodging, you know, huge, ginormous, ship containers. You know, they're falling all on them and stuff like that, and swinging from, you know, 100 feet up in the air. I mean, it just took it to a different place. I get where you're coming from. I totally do, because it's one person's interpretation.
Well, I mean, Stephen Cannell was one of the writers for the movie.
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah, see, he was. Yeah, true.
So, I mean, that was one of the things that, you know, at least I knew that there was somebody that was, you know, he was the creator of the original show. And so I knew that it should, at least on some level, unless the studio kind of stepped in and you know, did their thing to it, that it was going to remain at least somewhat faithful to it. But I understand that the feeling was completely different. To me, it was like, give the guys that created the A-Team this $1 million budget and this effects budget, and here, do whatever you want. You know?
Well, I mean, if they were going to do a reboot, one of the things I noted to myself that I wouldn't have minded is, if they were going to throw in a wrinkle here, have Sosa join the team.
Right.
Because she was good. You know what I mean? If they wanted to reboot it and bring it to the new generation, look, they have a female member of the A-Team who's kick-ass, just like everybody else.
Which they might do.
Yeah, but I mean, I could have seen that at the end. Like, if I was kind of actually expecting it when they did the thing at the end where they went, the A-Team, call us if you need us kind of thing, that little advertisement at the very end. If she had been the fifth member of the A-Team, that wouldn't have shocked me whatsoever.
Which, by the way, there was a female member of the A-Team in the actual television show. That's as well. She was a reporter who was their first client, essentially. Bringing Sosa in would end up providing those resources that she had. But, I mean, one of the things about her being a reporter was, I have access to a computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
See, there's an update. Intelligence. There's an update. You know, nowadays, everybody has a computer. I mean, you could bring out your cell phone and you'd have have a computer. Probably slower and stuff, but so the resources and everything like that. See, you would have something different. Bringing in Sosa would connect her into getting resources possibly through the government or something like that. Mm-hmm. If she's still, considered part of the military, just helping out the A-Team in their Soldier of Fortune work. Right. I really like to see a sequel to this movie where they actually took them into, because all this movie was essentially a revenge movie. They were framed and they were trying to clear their names. So that using that now that they're Soldiers of Fortune, actually seeing what they do during the Soldiers of Fortune. So an 18-2 is something that I would definitely like to see on this.
Did anybody catch the one cameo we had from the original one?
The Dirk Benedict cameo? I looked for it and never saw it.
No, Dirk actually wasn't in it. It was Dwight Schultz, Mr. Murdoch. And I didn't catch it when I saw the movie, so now I'm interested to know if anybody else did. He played German Doctor Number One.
Read somewhere that Dirk Benedict was in it, though.
He's not coming up in IMDb.
Well, I heard that he was laying in one of the tanning beds or something. It was some kind of crazy little thing like that.
Well, if he's in, he's uncredited, so...
Yeah.
I would be surprised if he was in it, because I heard that he's not in the greatest of health, but I guess Mr. T absolutely refused to be in it. I guess they asked him and he said no way,
sucker.
Yeah. So now I'm gonna have to go watch it again just to see if I can pick out Mr. Barkley.
I think I remember him from because Murdoch, when he was jailed, was put into the German psychological institute area, so they had to break him out from there, and that's where he was.
So what did we learn?
Here's what we learned from the A-Team. Not only can old helicopters do barrel rolls, they have bulletproof rotors. And it is completely possible to fly a tank. Not lying. B.A. Baracus is a very complicated character. We didn't really talk about that, did we? I really like that they threw in the "I can't kill anybody, Hannibal."
Yeah, I just can't do it.
Put him in this situation. It's awesome. Only good guys can shoot accurately. I think we talked about that. Mm-hmm. Never trust the government. And last but not least, if a complete stranger shoots you in the arm, it's okay as long as you're both ex-Army Rangers.
Just show the tattoo. Oh, don't worry. That's okay. You shot me in the arm.
Yeah. I thought that was... Well, that's the moment where I completely realized that it was a prequel, because up until then, I thought it was just them being them. So...
Yeah. All right. Recommendations. Steve, how would you recommend this movie?
I said I definitely would recommend it to people who like action shoot 'em ups, as well as the original TV show. I think if you just went into it going the A-Team, I don't know if you'd care so much. But knowing the history and having liked the original TV show, I was down. I enjoyed the overall, just not the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was the same way. If you're a fan of the show, or you like slightly over the top action movies, go ahead and see it. If not, then just kind of wait. See it on video.
And all I've got to say is, see it! See it now!
I love the movie. Do you think Jeff liked it?
Jeff's been talking about this movie for the past 3 to 4 days. I could barely contain him on this week's episode of Cubs Out Loud.
Yeah, I heard that.
I tried my best not to reveal anything.
I was trying to kick him under the table, but it wasn't working.
Oh, okay, so that's that, and this is this. 'Cause it's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future. In the future, we are looking at Christopher Nolan's new masterpiece, or at least we hope so. Inception, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Ken Watanabe. Thank you. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Marion Cotillard, Ellen Page, Tom Berenger, and of course, Michael Caine. Gotta love Michael Caine. And holy crap, we've got a lot about this movie. Somebody did just a little bit of research. Just a little.
Just a little bit.
I'm not talking.
Now, I have to ask because, you know, did you only see one trailer? Because there are three.
Oh, I only saw one.
Yeah, and actually, there. I think the only one that I've seen was the one that I saw at the A-Team.
Oh, okay.
I think I saw another one. And speaking of the other trailers, I actually wrote it down so I'd remember. I saw Dinner with Schmucks.
Oh, yeah.
Predators.
I'm not quite sure.
Predators, we should talk about in a future segment.
Yes.
I also saw The Adjustment Bureau.
That wasn't the line either.
Which sounds interesting. Oh,
which one did I see? Did I see that on this one? No. I think I saw it in front of Killers.
No. I wrote down exactly what trailers I saw, which is Twilight, which I put fail down in front of it. Predators, which I went, hopefully good because Robert Rodriguez is involved.
I think we should talk about that in a future show.
Inception, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Takers, The American, and Night and Day. That was my last one, Night and Day.
I only had four trailers, Dinner with Schmucks, Predators, Inception, and Night and Day.
I think I got thrown off a little bit because I went to see the A-Team a little early, so I did the whole, they do the real cinema thing or whatever where they do that, and they did a behind the scenes of Inception, actually. So I kind of got a little spoiled going into that one because they actually talked a little bit about how the director actually took them to locations and stuff and did interesting things like, you know, actually put them on snowy mountains and actually put them in deserts and actually put them, you know, like things like that. It's not just a soundstage. And he said that that helped make it more real.
Mm-hmm.
So just interesting points.
Well, visually, I mean, visually, the thing looks amazing. Agreed. There wasn't any part of it that I thought looked cheesy, at least in the trailer. You know, it looks like it's going to be very much one of those kind of screw with your mind sort of stories. My only fear, really, in the whole thing, and there's a couple of lines in the trailer that made me think this way. There's a line in there where Mr. DiCaprio says something like, "I found my way home. One more job and I get to leave." And there's a couple other lines in there, but my biggest fear is I hope this isn't one of those, like, you know, somebody wakes up and it was just a dream, or it ends up being, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the obvious way to go. And I'm hoping that Mr. Nolan is, since he's so involved with this, and I mean, he wrote the script for this, not the screenplay. I think this is a big project for him. Anyway, I'm hoping he's smart enough to have not gone for that obvious route. So, crossing my fingers. Looks interesting.
I don't want it to be, you know, the odd thing about it is I just saw, and I realize it's different people other than Leonardo, but I saw Shutter Island this weekend. And highly recommend it, by the way, to people. Go see it. Rent it at the Redbox for a dollar. It's definitely worth seeing, but it's completely visually stunning. Beautiful movie. But the plot was so damn predictable once the movie started. You know, if you know, and even though I wasn't trying to figure it out, I was just trying to go with the flow of the movie, and I'm like, oh, figured this one out. You know, sort of like 20 minutes in. So I hope this is not going to end up being one of those.
Right.
You know, yeah. I don't mind being a little mind fucked in a movie. You know, kind of a very Matrix-y, is this real, is this not, is he in a dream, is he alive, is he going to die in real life if he dies in this dream, are we all just a dream, you know, kind of like, you know, kinds of stuff. I mean, that's fine. Take me on the journey.
Are we all just trapped in a snow globe? Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. Take me to the, you know, they keep using all of these. I mean, through all the research that I did find, one of the common threads is they keep using these things, these terminologies, like, you know, we want to take you on the emotional journey, you know, we want you to see how this is set within the architecture of the mind, we want you to see, you know, it's like these big, I don't know, these big words. So I'm hoping that it really follows it.
Right. Well, I was reading through your notes on here, and there's the one talking about the scene with the fight in the hallway where the set was built so that they could rotate it completely 360 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, it's going to be like even if you know how they did it, it's very disorienting and you won't really know what's really going on, or it's really going to freak you out. And there's a couple of through the three trailers, I was able to piece together kind of a little bit of that sequence, and it does look really interesting. And I'm hoping that, you know, that kind of thing, because it kind of goes along with, they probably could have done something like that with CG, but mm-hmm. they actually built a real set that goes around 360 degrees mm-hmm. and made the actors kind of learn this choreography of how to move through this set.
And that's what I learned about this little short that they played, you know, at the movie theater, which mm-hmm. I was glad I got that insight to, because it sets up a lot of those pieces that we found on the internet, which is that they really wanted to see how the actors reacted. And so hopefully that's going to give a very genuine performance,
right?
You know, and it's going to look really neat. You know, it's like if the actor is cold, he's going to look cold on screen. He's not just going to be chattering his teeth like he's faking he's cold.
Right.
You know, if he's being tossed upside down in a giant hamster wheel, then, you know, he's going to look like he's getting tossed upside down in a giant hamster wheel.
Right. Here's these two tennis balls. Pretend they're this and look scared.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me hold the big Hulk sign up on a 12-foot stick and react like the Hulk is there. Have you ever seen those behind the scenes of the Incredible
yes.
Hulk?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, where they're like, ah, don't attack me. No, I want a giant Hulk there. You know, it's like, to scare you to death. Right. I mean, I'm glad that they're going back to kind of some of the realism mixed with CGI. I mean, that's fine. You know, as long as it looks cool. As long as it looks good.
Yeah, you know, I'm all about it. If you can do the effect practically, do it. No, mm-hmm. Only go to CGI as like a last sort of, like, if you need to do it because it's unsafe or it's just really, really, really cost prohibitive, then okay. But I'm all for practical effects in movies.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Now, what are y'all thinking about some of the topics that they're talking about? You know, like, they're talking about the fact that it's about exploring dream space, you know, the subconscious, you know, would it be used or abused? I mean, there's a lot of interesting topics that are going on, you know, that are kind of being tossed around with this. What do you think?
Generally, I mean, these types of movies, I'm generally a pretty big fan of. I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. It's a movie about a guy who, it's like people buy and sell dreams. And there's kind of like this black market for certain types of dreams that are illegal. So, like, you know, dream of somebody murdering somebody else is illegal or things like that. I can't remember. I'm going to be sitting here looking it up to see if I can figure it out. So, but I'm generally a fan of these kind of movies, so I'm really looking forward to it. I just hope they don't go the obvious, you know, I've figured out the whole plot in the last 20 minutes or first 20 minutes type of movie. That would make me really disappointed. So
what I'd really like to see is that they have this mechanic, this kind of overall flaw, look, or idea of what this world is like and being able to do the getting into the dreams and stuff, but have it be where the story could be set in a different locale, the exact same thing they're trying to solve a mystery or what have you, in one way. You could do it one way or you could do it this other way, which they think might be more effective. And it's just a conduit for the actual story. It's not the actual story is they can do this. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it's interesting also that they're kind of delving in. I mean, I'm glad that they haven't completely given away the plot of the story yet. Like, why are people going into people's dreams? Do you know, is it that they're trying to control them? Are they trying to steal information? Are they trying to frame, well, you know?
The idea I got from all three trailers is that there are certain people in the world that are really good at manipulating dream space. Mm-hmm. Like, they know that they're in a dream and are able to control it. So it's much like, you know, if you were to wake up from a dream and you knew you were dreaming and you go back to sleep and then you kind of had a lucid dream where you're able to kind of control everything that's going on. These people, there are certain people that are able to do that quite naturally, and that's kind of why you see Chris, Leonardo's character going to, he offers the girl a job because she's one of those people. And it's his job to try to, it's basically new corporate espionage, like get people into dreams. And then basically when they're in a dream, they start to give up their secrets in dreams. Right. And then he steals them, sort of. That's the impression I got from watching. And I'm coming up short on what this other movie was. I'll have to keep looking up what it is.
If any listeners out there realize what movie
let us know. Hopefully by then I figure it out. But
Overall, I just think this one sounds pretty interesting. I mean, there's a lot of backstory too, and it's kind of cool to see, to learn about how it's being made. And you know, I'm actually pretty excited about seeing it because of the pieces that I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, normally I'm not one of those people who really cares to. I mean, I like to know the background of things, but at the same time, like, this one has actually interested me. You know, and kind of hearing like how they're doing the things that they're doing. It's not just all about computer generation. You know, it's actually about actors acting, actually getting to see some real response to, you know, the stimulus that's being introduced, a lot of that stuff. It'll be neat to figure out where they're going to go with the topic in general. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's going to be a fun movie to see.
I just figured it out. The movie I was talking about is 1995 Strange Days, directed by James Cameron. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a James Cameron movie.
What I'm a little worried about, based off of the trailer at least, is that it's going to seem very much in the world of the Batman Begins and Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, it's not going to be the actual world. Like, there isn't going to be Gotham City necessarily mentioned or anything. Or this freak who dresses up like a Batman somewhere else. You know, but the tone and feel and the style of the movie, I'm a little worried that might end up looking a lot like Batman and almost make it so that all of Christopher Nolan movies look just like this,
right.
Which we can see it really fast.
Is it just another Leonardo DiCaprio in a fedora movie?
He seems to be doing a lot of those.
He looks exactly the same
in every movie.
In all movies, he has that look, that like slightly open mouth, like stare look, like that's like in every single trailer that he's in. I'll say it right now. My excitement level on this is I am intrigued. I will probably definitely want to go mm-hmm. see this. I'm not expecting much, honestly. I'm hoping that will exceed my expectations, but I think it's going to be, if anything, at least a good movie, enjoyable movie. But I'm not excited enough to be intrigued to go see it, but not excited enough to think this is going to be a great movie.
Mm. I think the effects look cool. I'm definitely interested in seeing how it's all going to come together. I'll continue to read the little, you know, blogs that are out there about it, you know, do I feel like I'm going to run out and want to see this movie right away? There's probably going to be something else that's going to interest me before it. But I'm intrigued, you know?
And like I said, I hope it doesn't end the way I'm thinking it will, but these types of movies, Dark City, you know, Fight Club, these types of movies that I really enjoy. So I am looking forward to seeing it, and just hope that it lives up to the story I've built up in my head so far. So that's where I sit on it. And I misspoke. James Cameron did not direct the movie. He wrote the movie. Somebody else directed it.
Ooh. But he was
All right.
Well, for next week, we're going to bring the T in GLBT history and actually talk about Soldier's Girl, which I'm actually interested in hearing what you guys have to say about it. I haven't seen it in a really long time. Yep. I haven't seen it in a really long time because I actually used to know I've had some conversations with the woman who is the girl in this movie. She's actually from the Nashville area. And it's been a long time since we had interactions, but I've seen her perform since then. She transitioned many years ago now, but and she's actually a well-known. If you've seen Beautiful Daughters, it's a logo special. Oh, or if you saw, oh my gosh, what was it? The Bachelorette, where on the Bachelorette version that was on Logo. I'm forgetting what it's called right now, but she's the woman. That's the same woman that is represented in the movie Soldier's Girl. Right. So I can't remember the name of it. But she did the Bachelor thing where she was – anyway, it's pretty interesting. But that – and then we're going to do Get Him to the Greek as our present and then Resident Evil Afterlife.
Number 4 in the Resident Evil quadrilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll finally be the last. I need to see – 3, I think. I haven't seen that one. But yeah. Excellent. You've got plenty of ways to contact us. Make comments what you thought about these movies or your excitement on Inception. Visit us at comesoutloud.com /movies. Go ahead and comment on the blog there. You can always shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Or you can check us out, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. We'd like to hear your what you think of the show. Give us a rating. Leave some feedback. We'll give shout-outs to any of the 5-star reviews we see on there, and we hope to hear from you. And that, my friends, is another COLmovies.
Hey, before we leave, really quick, just want to make sure that Jason and Robert, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Absolutely, I knew who that was at the time. I'm so sorry.
Hey, if you missed the last comes out, Steven forgot who did our cover art.
Hey, I tried. At least I tried to make the attempt.
That was awesome. We do got a little new one, which I uploaded for our art on Facebook.
So, sweet.
So everybody can see the new album art. They are awesome. Just looks amazing. That's all I got to say about this. So for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, all I've got to say is
bye.
Bye, everybody.
Later.
Vista, baby. I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.